This is Genoa.
And this is Yusuf.
And this is
In-Flight Entertainment. How's everyone? I hope everyone is staying safe, maintaining physical distancing, and enjoying some of our movie reviews for you guys to check out and determine if it's something you guys want to watch while you're quarantined with your kids and family.
Right. So this is Family Friendly Film Month, and we are focusing on family friendly films as the month theme states. Since it's the beginning of school, and we know that everyone's a little stressed and watching their kids struggle with at home Zoom and technology, and out for the teachers there that also trying to multitask like it's nobody's business teaching and figuring out tech. So we're here to help you find films to escape.
The master of puppetry, many recipes, is the master, Jim Henson. Jim Henson is definitely embedded in our childhood. He done a lot of things, from like Sesame Street to, this film here, Labyrinth.
This is basically the week of Jim Henson. So yeah. We are today, Tuesday, we're doing Labyrinth, and then we're going a little bit darker for Thursday with Dark Crystal. And as you mentioned, Jim Henson was the creator of a lot of our childhood movies and after school TV with Sesame Street and the Muppets. But yes, definitely, if you get a chance to see the Jim Henson exhibit with all the work that went in behind the puppets, definitely go see it.
And New York, correct?
I mean, last time I saw it was in New York, but it does tour. So it may be coming to a city near you one day.
Yes, definitely check it out. I mean, this is sheer imagination and creation that came out of him and his, his crew at the Jim Henson Workshop is second to none, and it still holds up to this day.
Yeah. So today we're doing Labyrinth, which was released in 1986 June. So sort of the summer time frame. So what were we watching and listening to the end of June of 1986?
Footnote. February 1986, my first niece was born. Erica. all right, so TV. So going from 5 to 1. Golden Girls was still, doing their thing. Number 5. your girl Angela Lansbury with Murder, She Wrote, number 4. Cheers, number 3. Michael J. Fox and the Crew, Family Ties, number 2. 86, the Huxtables are still holding it down with the Cosby's at number 1. And forgot about this song, but yeah, you couldn't get away from the song. I thought this came out earlier in the 80s. It was It's On My Own. Patti LaBelle, Michael McDonald.
Those being 80s. Going back to like the shows, can you imagine like a crossover between the Golden Girls and Murder, She Wrote? They needed to do that.
But do you think it would be a Scooby-Doo situation, whereas the Golden Girls are the gang and Angela Lansbury is old man Witherby, who may or may not be the one,
That's how they wrap up the entire Murder, She Wrote series, is that the Golden Girls go up to what was the cove that she lived in? Whatever the cove that she lived in. They discover that she's actually the murderer and solve all these mysteries.
Yes, I could have got away with it if it was a few meddling old geriatric women. Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Yeah, some throwing some designer women, just, you know,
yeah,
for some shits and giggles. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would have been amazing. All right, so who's in Labyrinth?
Labyrinth stars David Bowie.
Rest in peace.
And Jennifer Connelly. And that's really all you need to know. There's other humans in it, but everything else is really primarily puppets.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of Labyrinth is about a 16-year-old girl named Sarah who's given 13 hours to solve a labyrinth and rescue her baby brother, Toby, when her wish for him to be taken away is granted by the Goblin King, Jared. Yes. And David Bowie plays the Goblin King.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer Connelly plays the 16-year-old.
And she did. She's another one. It's like, well, definitely she looks older, but she still looks exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean, she's roughly, she's a couple years older than me. She's almost a decade older than you. But yeah, she hasn't aged much. She still looks absolutely beautiful. Yeah. She's in Snowpiercer on TBS.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last film she was in was Alita, Battle Angel. She was Doc Ito's ex-wife.
Yeah, she sort of played a bad guy.
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
But Labyrinth was one of her first films. I mean, she was in a few things before it, but I think this was her big breakout film.
Yes. And actually, what I forgot about Labyrinth, I believe this film was in conjunction with Lucasfilm. I think George Lucas executive produced this film. So it was a collaboration. It was a George Lucas, Jim Henson collaboration, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we needed more of those in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's pretty cool, like behind the scenes, how all these kind of collaborators and directors, you know, yeah, constantly work with each other. Just like, Frank Oz was the voice of like Yoda in Empire Strikes Back, which of course is a George Lucas joint. And then, you know, George Lucas turned around and, you know, executive produced this particular film that Jim Henson, you know, conceived and directed. So it's pretty cool, like how everyone behind the scenes were constantly collaborating with each other and doing projects and coming out with these 80s classics.
I mean, you know, when you're surrounded by a lot of talented, very creative people, I think it's natural for people wanting to partner up and come up with something big and really feed off of each other's ideas. But yeah, it seemed to happen a lot in the
80s. Yeah. So Sarah, our main character, Jennifer Connelly, like she wants to be kind of like a theater, like an actress. Like she's in the theater.
She's a theater kid.
Exactly. Yeah. Theater. It opens up. She's at the park. She's in the park and she's reciting this line, but she can't remember the last part. So this is like foreshadow for the third act. So it's very key information. Like, yeah. And she can't remember the last part. And she looked in her books like, oh, okay. What's the last one? You don't have control of me, right? Is that she always forget that last part of the.
Yeah.
You have no control. Okay. And so she come home and, you know, she's being a little bratty brat because
she's a teenager.
Yeah, so the stepmother and dad got to leave, but she has to take care of her little brother, which she don't want to do.
Right. So that her parents, so her dad and her stepmom could go out to dinner and have a date night. You know, she's being a bratty little teenager. That's all. Just, you don't understand me. You're making me do all the work. Playing this like fake Cinderella type of character. I have to watch my baby brother, and you guys always go out and have all the fun.
Yeah, she was she was the original Karen.
Yes.
Like, things are so hard. You violated her freedom to be an actress and do what you want to do. So she gets so pissed off. She recites this chant in her labyrinth book to have the Goblin King take her little brother away.
Yes.
And so enter, what's his name? Jareth. Jareth, yes. The Goblin King.
King of the Goblins.
Yeah, aka David Bowie. It's funny. I wanted to read into this a little bit, but I didn't have time to. Like, I wonder, he had kids around this time, right? David Bowie, like, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if this was like, you know, I want to do a kids movie.
I mean, but it's also a fantastic, like, character.
Yeah.
I know that, like, in 86, I think David Bowie's, like, 80s record came out, which had, like, China Doll on it. And
Let's Dance.
Yes, yeah. That one.
That was a joy.
But prior to that coming out, I remember my parents watching, is it Man That Fell From Space? And them being like so in awe of David Bowie and his acting and everything, and me sitting there watching that with them going, what the fuck is going on with this shit? And then him playing this part, I was like, okay, yeah, David Bowie, I get it now. Yes. Not from an acting perspective, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I love what he did with, you know, the Goblin King character. He played it playful. He wasn't sinister, even though he had a couple of scenes where, you know, you see like, hey, if he really wanted to, he can lay the hammer down and, like, you know, wreak some havoc if he wanted. But
yeah, it's like passive aggressive evil.
Right.
Where he comes in and he's like, well, you asked for this, so I did it for you. And the scenes where he's really manipulating people and playing evil, it's like, well, you promised me something, and so you better do it, or I'll send you to the swamps, smelly swamps, something swamps.
Eternal stench. What, the swamp?
Yeah. The eternal stench, yeah. But yeah, it's like passive aggressive evil where it's not in your face. You kind of he makes it feel like it's your fault that he's being evil. It's brilliant. I think something to learn from your for parenting.
And what is a general tidbit on that one?
It's, you know, don't scare your kids all right out. Just sort of make them think that it's their fault you're being evil towards them.
And there's your general tidbit.
From someone that doesn't have kids.
You know, what they say is, you know, sometimes psychology is the best warfare.
Exactly. I find using passive-aggressive features sometimes can be very beneficial versus outright being mean. So
yeah, totally.
There's a place for them when needed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and
you just can't go full Karen.
No. You won't be respected like that. But what I did like about how he played, you know, like you were saying, one, he was approaching like his role, or, you know, as Jared, it's like, well, you know, I would just be chilling in my castle doing nothing, but you summoned me. Yeah, you know, so therefore I have to, you know, be a man of my word and, you know, do good on the, you know, your requests. You know, I didn't call, you called me, type situation. And also, like you were saying, like, he have a castle, like, he's the king. It's like, there's no reason for him to be intimidated. There's no reason for him to be mustache twirly because he's the king. He have a castle. He runs that joint. It's like, Yeah, he's like, you know, like, hey, like, this is mine. Like, there's no reason for this little peon of a teenager to even try to, you know, like, I shouldn't even be threatened about it. Like, she's, you know, she's nobody. She's nobody. She's a nobody. What's she going to do? So I love how he plays. He's playing so gleefully, like, hey, I'm a king, whatever. Like, you're not going to get to me. I'm good. I'm going to take you. Your brother. And, you know, we're going to be chilling. Like, it's all good. Yeah, I did like how he played it.
Yeah. So after Toby's taken by the Goblin King, Sarah begs to get Toby back, which is the name of the baby. And he says, well, in order to get him back, you have to make it through my maze. And you have 13 hours to do it. And so now begins her journey to realize that she's not a self-centered teenager, that she does love her little brother.
Yeah. So there you go. There's your moral arc for the main character, you know. Because she made this selfish request. Because she was thinking about her and her inconveniences, but she wasn't thinking about the consequences of her decisions and her actions, you know. So,
yeah. So before we actually meet the Goblin King and before Toby gets taken, we actually get a nice little tour of her bedroom. And there's in the 80s, there's this like labyrinth game where you had a little marble that went around a labyrinth and you moved it left, right, up and down. To get the ball to the end of the labyrinth, and it could fall through holes and you'd have to start over. And then she also has a lot of like dolls up on the walls and pictures throughout the room of like the MC Escher guys walking up on the,
down the stairs.
Mm-hmm. And so basically as we're moving through the labyrinth for her to save Toby, all the things that she sort of had in her room start to come to life in the labyrinth. So one is obviously the labyrinth game is now the actual labyrinth. And some of the dolls that she had start to also come alive in characters that she meets throughout her journey.
Right. Yeah. So it's a very, and like I would say, I think we had this conversation back when we were talking about, we were talking about the animated movie like Sword in the Stone. You know, the whole story of the running theme of the main characters coming across this band of misfits, like the ragtag bunch, you know, off to this quest type thing. Like I always in Black Cauldron, like we talk about that too. You know, these people that you come across in this journey that's helping each other. Like they don't really know each other, but they know, you know, they want to help each other achieve a goal. Yeah. Like the selflessness of the, you know, the gang of strangers. So yeah, and that's kind of how you have with this story. And also, of course, it's a lot of Wizard of Oz vibe to the whole journey. So yeah, I mean, tonally, it was a good tone, you know, adventurous tone.
Yeah, and actually, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the Wizard of Oz, because one of the Muppets that or the characters that she meets in the labyrinth is called the Junk Lady. She's like covered with junk. Mm-hmm. She actually opens a book and she flips to the title page and it says The Wizard of Oz. So they're sort of making some references to that in there. So, yes.
There you go. Yeah. The influences. it's all circular, whatever. It goes in circles.
And so, I mean, we won't tell you all the things that she experiences with the labyrinth, because I feel like that's something that you should experience with your kids, because it is a fun movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like most kids from the 80s remember the song, and it's the magic song.
Oh, yeah. That's when Jared was. All right. Okay. So one thing that always, every time I watch it, it usually have me scratching my head. It's all, you know, when a brother is with the, you know, with the gang, Jared in the group, and you know, and they're kind of singing, dancing like that. Why, I wonder why they decided to have the little baby like standing up all the time when no one's holding the baby. It looked very weird.
Apparently, the real life baby, whose name was Toby in real life, really liked the puppets, and so they actually had a hard time getting him to cry or be scared of them, and he just wanted to laugh and play with them. So
I would too. Hey, big, it was like huge teddy bears, of course.
Yeah. I mean, in the Magic Dance song, he is crying at the beginning, and they had to wait for him to be tired. And actually crying that he wanted to go to sleep to film that scene, which I think goes against SAG children, working with children rules. That might be against the rules, but the baby was one of the writer's animatronics kids. So okay, yeah, I fine. Guess.
Yeah.
Let's torture the kids some.
Yeah. He was, yeah. It was a supervisor on set. It was fine. Oh, and did you know? Okay. Did you hear about the now famous actors who auditioned for Aladdin before they landed on Jennifer Connelly?
I mean, I know some of them, but why don't you tell us?
All right. So it was Jane Krakowski from 30 Rock, Yasmin Bleeth, Sarah Jessica Parker, Mary Stuart Matheson, Laura Dern, Lily Taylor, Ally Sheedy, and Mia Sara. Now, me, okay. If
what did you say? Helen Bonham Carter also?
No, Ally Sheedy.
But Helen Bonham Carter was also up for it.
Oh, interesting. Now, yeah. if Jennifer Connelly didn't issue, if somehow there were scheduling conflicts and she didn't make it, who would have been your second pick?
Let's see. I mean, I'm thinking of like 80, like how they were in the 80s and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I could get behind. I feel like Helena Bonham Carter, especially when you see how she was in Window with a View, I could get behind her doing it. Or Marissa Tomei.
Okay. Yeah, I know that. I don't know. I think Ally Sheedy would have pulled it off.
Yeah, but I feel like because she was so like Rat Pack 80s type of thing, it would have had a very different tone to it if she had been in it.
Uh-huh.
It would have felt like, oh, it's just another Rat Pack movie.
So you want to keep all the John Hughes people away?
Yeah.
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, I would go with Helen. I mean, she can't do wrong having her in your movie.
Yeah, and for people, listeners that aren't aware, like before she did Fight Club, she did a lot of period type films, period piece films, where
someone want to chime in?
Yeah. Shadow is very into this conversation. But she did a lot of period pieces where she doesn't look as crazy. I think after Fight Club, she started to get more of the unique look that attracted her current partner.
Yeah, which was Tim Burton. Right. Did you know Darth Vader was on the set?
Why was Darth Vader on the set?
All right, so like I said, executive producer George Lucas was on hand.
Wait. The white actor that played Darth Vader, the voice of Darth Vader, or just the costume of Darth Vader?
So George Lucas surprised the cast. He wasn't on camera, but the first day of filming, George Lucas surprised the cast by having like Darth Vader come on set.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he wasn't in the movie. No, so you don't have to go back and be like, oh, it was a shot with Darth Vader. And, it wasn't. and it seems like Jim Henson's family was involved. So Jim Henson's son Brian was the voice of Hoggle, and his daughter Cheryl was a puppeteer for one of the fairies. Yeah, you know, keep it in the family.
I mean, that way you can push people to work more than the 8 hours a day.
Bowie did his own baby gurgle stunts.
Yeah, so I think the magic dance song, you hear a baby gurgling, and that's not the baby, that's David Bowie. One thing that I always remember from the film is the first time Sarah meets the Goblin King is that he has this crystal ball that he's like moving around his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually, those aren't David Bowie's hands. That is a clown, like a juggler person that specializes in that.
Yeah.
And so the way he did that was he put his hands through the sleeves in front of David Bowie, and then he did all the handwork while David Bowie stood there reciting the lines. And he had to practice a lot to figure out how to do that. Basically blindfolded because he couldn't see what his hands were actually doing. So that is super impressive.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. And it's so funny how, you know, movies through the years become, you know, a classic and just embraced by the public. But when you dig into initial, you know, box office runs on most of the movies that were like, you know, we loved, like they were not box office hits. And this film is one of them. So pretty much, Jim Henson was devastated by the film's box office failure, which is crazy. Henson's wife, Jane, said it felt like her husband like he was being personally rejected by audiences. Before he passed in 1990, Henson was made aware of and pleased about the cult following that was forming around the movie. I like, how did you not? I don't know. Audience is weird.
In my mind, I thought it was a blockbuster because every time it came on HBO, I would watch it as a kid. So I just, that blows my mind. But the budget was $25 million. To this, according to IMDb, they've only made about $14 million off of the movie. So they still haven't made their money back.
Wait, time out. So you're telling me with like home video, VHS, whatever's, it haven't made its money back?
Apparently not.
Okay.
Everyone needs to go out there and rent this movie.
I'm going to say box office, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, over the decades, it's okay now. It's okay. Yeah, I mean, plus I think it's on, no, it's not on Disney, but yeah,
I think it's on Amazon Prime right now,
right? But yeah, no, like I said, over the decades, I'm sure it made his money back home. But and that was the beauty of the home video boom. It resurrected a lot of movies that didn't do well in box office. You know, it caught a second life in home video, you know, Blockbuster, you know, rentals, people, you know, discovering these films that they didn't see in movie theaters. And they're like, oh, wow, this is a really awesome movie. And they rent it 6-7 times. And then when it comes on sale, they buy it and have it in their collection. So, yeah, in the 80s, the home video market really saved a lot of films from being just blinked into obscurity.
Yeah, I feel like it's funny because just so you know, the New York Times is also reporting that the film only made about $13 million. So I don't think it's not reporting That's just box office.
Yeah, it's box office.
But I feel like there's a bunch of movies from the 80s that we probably, like a select group of us all fell in love with, and Labyrinth is definitely one of them, that because of Blockbuster and eventually Netflix and probably TBS or TNT, whichever channel you were staying up watching late, you rediscovered these films and fell in love with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You drink a little, you watch the film, you like it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, so many movies that we just, you know, embrace. It's like, oh, this is a classic. Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, a lot of John Carpenter movies. I mean, so many people rediscover a lot of John Carpenter movies on home video that they didn't necessarily see in the theaters in the theatrical run. And that's why he's such like an all like such a well like received like, oh, John Carpenter's the man, you know, after the fact.
Yeah, a more recent film that's actually happened to, which is a documentary about, is the movie Burlesque, which blows my mind away that has a cult following. But
Burlesque. Wait a minute, is it a movie or a documentary?
Is a documentary about the cult following of Burlesque.
Oh, because I thought you were talking about the movie Burlesque with Christina Aguilera and Cher.
Oh, no, it's not Burlesque. What's the one with the girl from Saved by the Bell that's a stripper?
Ooh, Showgirls.
Showgirls, yeah. Showgirls is the movie that has the cult following now.
Yeah, oh, no, that was not a documentary.
No, but there's a documentary about the cult following.
Oh, really? It's a documentary about the cult following of Showgirls. Nice.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, she was, and honestly to me, she was I was crushing on her out of all the Saved by the Bell, like, gals. Maybe because the curly hair. Possibly, and she was a little taller, maybe, but yeah, I was crushing her a little bit, everybody else. But that was just me. So what's our family quarantine rating?
Right. Sit on the sofa and watch it with the kids. You'd rather help them with their Zoom virtual teaching class, or go play in the park without a mask and catch the COVID. I mean, you know, because of nostalgia, this is definitely sit on the sofa and watch it with the kids.
Yeah, and Shadow agrees.
He does.
Yeah.
I mean, she sat on the sofa and watched it with me last night, so she agrees, yes.
Yes. Yeah, no, same here. This is good, like, revisiting these movies. Not only that, you know, performance was good. You know, the late great David Bowie, it was good seeing, you know, him being fun and performing and, you know, doing his thing. You could tell he was having a lot of fun in this movie. And also, definitely sit down with your kids and watch this movie just off the general principle of them seeing how it was done back in the days. You know, I know, like, in the age of CG and all that stuff, it's like you see this set, like, workers, you know, painters, puppeteers, everyone, they were like man hours putting together what you're seeing. You know, there's people behind the camera, there are people in the little, like, puppet suits, whatever. It was just like you could feel the authenticity. You could feel there were people crafting, painting, chipping, molding, you know, to bring what you've seen on the screen. And it just for sheer appreciation of how things were crafted back then, you know, especially, you know, with the Jim Henson Workshop and all that good stuff. So, yeah, definitely. I'd sit down with your kids, give them a history lesson on, you know, yeah, how things were done pre-CG.
Yeah, if you can, I know there's definitely, like, a making of Labyrinth, so if you can find that or behind the scenes of Labyrinth. And if you can find that anywhere and watch that with their kids, maybe it'll inspire them to, that they can go out and create cool things that maybe others haven't thought of yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Some good hands-on stuff. Yeah, cool. So there you have it, guys. Labyrinth. Sit down with your kids, watch it. They will enjoy it. It's a lot of cool things, visually.
And some fun songs. Even like, I'm usually anti musical, but yeah, there's some fun songs in there.
Yeah, totally. It was only maybe like two or three. I mean, it wasn't like all through the movie. But it was just cool. Yeah, guys. So go back, check it out, the kiddies. And Thursday, we're going to, hit you guys with something darker. But still a Jim.
Still in the Jim Henson world.
Exactly.
It's Jim Henson's week.
Yes.
Family-friendly film, Jim Henson week.
That's right. Until Thursday, wish everyone safe physical distancing and...
wear a mask.
Yes. Peace.